I want to begin tonight by just calling your attention to the course outline. It's simply titled in your folder there or your packet that you got in, Daily Life at the Time of Jesus. And I just want to kind of review with you the overarching course. We won't do all this tonight. We're going to get through the first few of them tonight. But notice again some of the things I want to cover with you as we study daily life in the time of Jesus. So we're going to just begin kind of up in outer space and look down on the Holy Land and look at the geography and the land. And we're going to then begin looking at some not just physical landmarks but regions and territorial distinctions. And then I want to kind of turn our focus into Galilee. Where we'll begin to see that that's where Jesus did most of his public ministry, all right? Then I want to talk a little bit today also about climate. What was the climate like, the weather, and so on, which could vary from very quickly from place to place. And then let's look a little bit at the people themselves. Now, what did they look like, and so on. Now, we're going to talk more about things like what clothes and things they wore later, all right? But just again, their general appearance. What were the people of Jesus' time? What do we know about what they looked like? All right. And then, as we continue to kind of, you know, tighten our focus, we'll look at villages. What were their villages and towns like? And how did they look? And what were some of the things you'd find in a typical town or village? Then we'll begin, probably this will begin next week, what were their houses like? And there's some very interesting things about their houses and so on. And then some more things about daily life at home. What kind of clothes did they wear? What foods did they eat? What were their meals like? Things like personal hygiene. And, you know, when I use the word domestic animals, you're probably thinking dogs and cats, and that, they didn't have those. But they had different animals, working animals that they kept around the house, and we'll look at those. We want to look at marriage and family. What were weddings like? And then a little bit about family life and structure. Then extended nuclear family questions and so on. All right. Then works and trades. What were some of the things they did for a living? You know, and you see a little list there of things that we'll look at. And then also, as we go along, you may have some subjects you want me to talk about that will be hopefully have a little time to add some stuff in. And then I'd also then finally like to bring the end of the 4 weeks to the end of all things. What we're looking at, this little world that we're looking at, kind of went away in AD 70. There was a terrible war that broke out in this region, you know, kind of like there's always war there now. And it really destroyed the Holy Land, just wiped out life as that we're studying, just wiped it out. So we'll look at that. It was a terrible war at the end, and 1.2 million Jews lost their lives in that war. So, and that took place in 70 AD, just 40 years after Jesus died and went and rose and then went to heaven. Okay? So that's a quick overview of the whole course, all right? Now, today, I want to begin, as you can see in the outline, by looking, first of all, at the questions of the geography and the land and so on, all right? Now, a couple of other things I wanted to show you. I have a lot of written notes, and could you kind of hold this open? Just sort of hold it up and hold it open for you. They're written notes, and if we tried to print all these written notes out for you, that'd be a paper factory. And most of you don't really like to retain a lot of notes anyway, but if you would like a set of notes, all right, we're going to do a sign-up so that by the end of the course I can provide you a little packet of written notes that have some pictures and more, some of these things I'm teaching you in writing, okay? So just know that it will be available for you at the end, but I just didn't want to just give everybody a copy since I know a lot of stuff ends up in file 13.
Whoa.
So if you want a set, you're certainly welcome to it. So this type of a thing, and there's already a good number of pages in here, and there'll be more when I'm done, but a lot of different things are in these. Okay, so just so you know about that. Secondly, I hope I gave a chance for some of you to look at this topographical or 3D map of the Holy Land, and that's up here on the table if you haven't gotten a chance to look at it. But it will show you, again, this is a very hilly, mountainous region that Jesus lived in, and we're going to talk about that tonight. Okay? All right, with all that in mind, let me now begin to move into the material for tonight. And let me see if I can get this microphone to stay put. I guess I can.
Dance with the phone.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to have a lot of slides to show you here in just a moment. But what I'd like to begin with is just tell you a few things, and then we'll look at some slides that will sort of illustrate what I'm about to tell you. So first of all, this land, the Holy Land, we call it today the Holy Land, at the time of Jesus was known by the Greeks and Romans by the name Palestine. Palestine. Now, there were no Palestinians in those days. You know, that's a group, an ethnic group that came later, much later, in fact, in the last couple hundred years. But it was called Palestine by the Greeks and the Romans. But the Jews never called it Palestine. There was a tiny little part of Palestine, sort of near the Mediterranean Sea, a little region that they might have called Palestine. The name Palestine comes from the ancient name for the Philistines who lived in that region along the coast. And Philistines, just over the centuries, got changed into Palestines, and then Palestine became a kind of a name that stuck. Now, what did the Jewish people call their land? And that's very strange. You know, we say, the United States of America. We know what to call our land. By gosh, this is the USA. You know, all right, got that. But the Jews never really refer to their land in one particular way. They might use the term, they might use the term promised land. They might just call it the land of Canaan because the Canaanites used to live there. They sometimes spoke of it as the land of Judah. Sometimes they just simply called it the land. The land. This is the land that God gave us. Okay, so they didn't. Israel was the name of the 12 tribes, kind of confederate, but that was the name for the people, not for the land or the country. That only became later when it broke into two pieces, the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel. So again, generally, people just refer to it as our land, our land. Now, I want to just say that the Holy Land is very, very volatile. Let me go ahead and put up one slide to get us started. Let's just begin now by looking just from space. Now, when you look at the Holy Land from space, you're always going to see two fundamental things. You got the Sea of Galilee up here in the north. That's that little lake. It's really not a sea at all. It's a lake. It's a freshwater lake. It's not even salt, all right? So you've got that. And then here's this Jordan River that comes down through here, meandering, goes like this and this and this. How many of you have been to Israel? Raise your hand. All right, yeah. You've been to the Jordan. You know, it's better, in places it's a little better than a creek. And it's got like kind of a funny green look to it. Some people say, why don't you go in that water? I said, nah, I don't think so. All right. But anyway, it comes down through here, and it finally ends down here at what's called the Dead Sea. And it's called Dead Sea for a good reason. There's just absolutely nothing that lives in it. It's so salty that nothing can live in it. And it's basically just a puddle at the bottom of the earth. This place that I'm pointing to, the Dead Sea, is the lowest place on earth, not covered by oceans. There's no lower place on earth than the Dead Sea. You're about 1,400 feet below sea level. So you have to go up to get to the ocean from the Dead Sea. The Mediterranean, of course, is sea level up here. And then you come to a ridge of mountains here, and then it drops 3,500 feet down into this gorge. And you'll see that in a minute. And it's this Dead Sea. And what happens is the water comes down, and it empties here, and it has nowhere to go. It's at the bottom of the earth. And it just sits there, and it evaporates. And because it only takes water, it doesn't give it up. It's very, very salty, and nothing can live in it. And some of you, when I was there, some of you went into the Dead Sea. Again, I didn't want to go into that water. But you can really float, you know. You're just floating like on top of the water. It's an amazing experience. But again, anytime you look at the Holy Land, these are the two main features that sort of frame it out for you. This is Galilee up in the north. And then coming down, this is the land of Judah down here. Jerusalem is right here. You can almost see the outlines of the walls. I don't know how well you can see in the far back some of these things, but there's like, this is where Jerusalem is right here. Okay, and Bethlehem is over here, right in this area. And then you drop down into the Dead Sea. Jericho is here, and you got the Dead Sea. But this is the basic land of what we call today Israel. Okay. Down here, by the way, where all the trouble is right now, Gaza, okay? Now, nobody really lived in Gaza in Jesus' day, right? But it's just kind of a desert, bad, it's not good land. So, but down here is Gaza. And this right here is where Egypt picks up, okay? So this is the Negev Desert down here, and just real quickly looking at that. Now, I want to then go to the next slide that just puts a little bit of, just a little bit more to it. You see that, again, just a quick review. Okay, so here is the Sea of Galilee. Capernaum, which was Jesus' town that he was kind of his home base for his ministry, is right over here. Nazareth is right about over here. We'll see that in a minute. Okay, and then the Jordan River comes down to the Dead Sea, and Jerusalem is here. This is the Mediterranean Ocean. Okay. Now, moving on, though, let's look. This is a very, it's a very diverse region, both geologically and in terms of its climate and in terms of its vegetation. This, all these mountains and this deep crevasse in the middle, this big gorge, and more mountains over here, has a dramatic effect on the climate. It has a dramatic effect on the vegetation, and we're going to see all that as we go. But just by looking at this, you can see already how mountainous this region is. Now, these mountains here are the Judean mountains here, the hill country of Judea. Remember how Mary made haste and went to the hill country of Judea? That's right in here, okay? And they're like, if you've been there before, they're like Appalachian mountains. We're not talking little rolling hills. You've been to the mountains we got out for the last year. Appalachian mountains. These are steep, tall hills. And likewise, all the way up through Galilee, where Jesus, Nazareth, all that's all tucked up in the Galilean mountains again. And they are very much like Appalachian mountains. These are not little hills. Can you imagine Mary is pregnant, making haste to the hill country? Yeah, come on, y'all. And then they had to go down to Bethlehem from Nazareth. Okay. Now, by the way, they had a little secret. When they wanted to go, they would go up by the sea road. See how flat it is right there? Okay. But you still have to come up here, and then you have to ascend all the way up to Jerusalem. And you have to go all the way up there, so almost 1,200 feet up. So there's some of the Psalms of Ascent, they're called. I rejoiced when I heard them say, "Let us go up to the house of the Lord." And when they said up, they meant up. Because you took the sea road, or you might sometimes go down through this area here, but either way, you had to go up to the mountain house of the Lord. So it was called the Psalms of Ascent. As you made this long climb, you sang to stay happy. Okay. All right. So, but I hope you can just see how rich and diverse this area is. Now, as I go through with these slides, you're going to see, but for example, here in these hills, you've got almost like the Appalachian Mountains. They don't have quite as many trees as we do. They're mostly pines and some oaks, but they're still very, it's a very luscious region, a lot of trees and so on. They call this the Mediterranean forest through here. And a lot of good, rich, fertile farmland in this area. But over here, where it drops down, way down into the Dead Sea, that is howling desert. Nothing is alive down there. It is the driest, just nothing. You won't see anything green as far as you can see. It's just incredible. Powerfully dry. Deep, deep desert. So you've got that. Down in that deep desert is a little town here called Jericho, right where I've got the red dot. And one day, we know that Jesus would sometimes make the journey to Jerusalem, not along the route by the sea, but he would make it down through the Jordan Valley and come down through here and go through that howling desert. And one day, just to show how hardy, think how what good shape these people had to be. Now, most of us get out of breath just walking around the corner. But look at this. He made the journey all the way down, and it took the better part of 2 days. And he gets here to Jericho. He spent the day in Jericho. He healed a blind man. You remember that story, the blind man in Jericho. And he then makes the ascent to Jerusalem, which is 3,500 feet up. And that night he went to a party over here in Bethany at Martha and Mary's house that very night. I mean, I don't know about you. I'd be wiped out. I'd be in bed. So I want you to think of Jesus and Mary and Joseph and the disciples, the apostles. These were not
these little will-o-wisp of people that we sometimes see in modern art, who were slight and slender. These were tough, hardy people, all right? They had a little meat on their bones, and they had stamina, and they were strong, hardy people. You had to be. You just could not survive in this kind of a terrain where you had to do everything on foot. You just couldn't do it if you weren't in good shape, okay? So keep that in mind as we move along. All right, a little bit more. I'm going to just read from my notes about the geography, all right? The Holy Land is very volatile geologically. Earthquakes and volcanoes have plagued the region for millennia. Numerous plates and rifts run under and adjacent to the land of Israel. Although many Bible lands are thought to be popularly flat and desert-like landscapes, the region is in fact better described as mountainous and hilly, and it has regions that are green. Now, when I say this is volatile geologically, you see this rift here? Right, there's two plates pulling apart in the earth there. Now, you remember the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah? Fire and brimstone and all that stuff? Remember that? That's this region right in here where we think Sodom and Gomorrah was, where the Dead Sea is today. Now, what likely was happening at that time was geological stuff. It was what was called a caldera. It just blew up. All the dust and all the lava came pouring out. And fire and brimstone, quite literally. I'm not saying God didn't do it. I'm just saying he used natural means to accomplish it. And so this whole region down here, when Abraham first looked at it, the Bible says it was rich and green and beautiful. But after Sodom and Gomorrah, it was a horrible wasteland. So what likely happened was the plates pulled apart. This one went this way, and this one over here went that way. And you ended up with this awful tear in the earth's crust. And that's what's happening geologically. Now, in our more modern times, most of us have never heard of any earthquakes or volcanic activity in the Holy Land. Remember, when Jesus was on the cross, there was an earthquake. And there are earth tremors that go through there frequently. However, no major ones in really the last 1,000 years, all right? But it has been known for there to be earthquakes in that region, and they have at times plagued at that time. And even when Jesus was alive, there were earthquakes. Okay? So just so you know, it's a very volatile land. All right, now, moving on. Much of the intense diversity in terms of vegetation is due to these hills. What happens is, you see this water out here, that's the Mediterranean Ocean. And like any range of mountains, anyone ever been out west to the Cascades in Oregon and California and, you know, up in Washington State? You know what happens, right? All that water hits those mountains. It's like the air lifts, it's like a sponge, and all that water gets squeezed out. So on one side of the mountains, you've got this almost rainforest, just huge trees. And they get, you know, just incredible amounts of rain. And then on the other side of the mountains, you go right over the spine of the mountains. Like when I was in Washington State, up at the top of Mount Baker and all that, there's still snow up there. They had 300 inches of snow last year up there. And then you go a few more miles on the other side, all of a sudden you drop down into a very deep desert on the other side of the mountains. And once again, it's a very similar situation here. These mountains bring out the moisture that rises, and then over on this side it's very dry over there, almost desert-like. So this topography of mountains and the ocean and all that stuff coming together, all that creates very regional differences. So you can be in Jerusalem, which is right here, and you can be here on this side of Jerusalem over in there. You've got forest, Appalachian Mountain forest. And then you go just 5 miles over the hill and you drop down into deep desert. Within 5-6 miles, the entire climate goes from trees to just nothing. Nothing grows. It's incredible. It's a very, very powerfully differentiated climate. And goes on like that. So, let me now show you some pictures, because, you know, I'm talking a lot, and I want you to see some pictures of what I'm talking about. So here we go with this. It's just a map that sort of shows you what happens in this region. The dark green are forest, and you see this little narrow forest and things down here. That now the tallest forests are these green ones here. It's kind of hard to see on this, but this lighter brown is forest, but it's not as rich and as thick, okay? And then over here you've got desert. So you see again, there's a little ring of trees and forest right along the coast, because all the prevailing winds come this way and they bring moisture and they hit the mountains, and then all the rain gets wrung out. But on the other side, there's all this deep desert, okay? Now let's just kind of look at some pictures and things that'll help. So this sort of shows you in just one picture the kind of diversity that I'm talking about. Here we are on a very luscious side of this of Galilee. We're on this little, this is the Sea of Galilee here, up in the north, that little small lake. And we're on the side of the lake that is not too far from Nazareth and Capernaum in that area. Notice, look at all this green. Look across the lake. The whole climate changes. Because what you see, if you could come back on this side of the picture where we are, there's some mountains that go up. We're looking this way, and there's mountains behind me. You got that? And all that rain just kind of ends about here and right through the here. And look at that. Those are called the Golan Heights. And look how dry they are. There's almost nothing over there. Now, by the way, a lot of people think that in Jesus' time there were more trees on the Golan Heights. We'll talk about the change of climate a little bit in the region and deforestation that happened, okay? And they're trying to change that today. But this is much. You see how, just look at that. That's, what is that? Maybe 5 miles across, max, maybe 3 miles. Look at that. See the difference? Welcome to the Holy Land. Okay. Some people say, oh, that doesn't look like a land of milk and honey. That doesn't, but this over here does. So, all right, moving on. This is beautiful green Galilee. This is the Sea of Galilee down here. We're up on one of those mountains I was talking about. We're looking down into a beautiful green valley. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful? And of course, this is probably taken in the spring, or the wet months. You know, this is probably like in April, okay? Now, they go through a dry period where this might not be quite that luscious and green, but nevertheless, this is Galilee, and of course, you can't really see very far, but you look across again to the Golan Heights, and you can see there's not much green over there, okay? So, but beautiful green Galilee, that's where Jesus lived, and it was a farming region, and they grew grapes, and they had figs and pomegranates, and they grew wheat, and they grew, crops of every kind, and it was a very rich agricultural area. Now, this is these are the hill country of Judea and Galilee. I told you, they're like Appalachian Mountains. Remember that little rim of mountains I told you about? When Mary went through the hill country to see Elizabeth, she might have taken the way by the sea, but eventually she had to do some of this. Now, she wouldn't walk up the spine of a mountain. I mean, there are little passes and ways they get through, but at the end of the day, come on, pay attention, y'all. And when they went to Bethlehem, they had to go through the hill country of Judea to get up through there. And Mary was 9 months pregnant at that time. Hello? Okay, but you see it again. These are what is called the Mediterranean forest. And it looks a lot like the Appalachian Mountains right near here. Okay, but it's a very narrow band of forest. It's probably about, maybe its widest area is about 20 miles wide, but it's much thinner in other areas. So these mountains capture that moisture coming up from the Mediterranean. They squeeze the rain out. And on the other side, very dry. Okay, this is now down by the Sea of Galilee, or the Dead Sea. But I told you, nothing. Zero. That's not that far from Jerusalem and those trees I was just showing you. Those, I would say there's probably 15 miles between these hills and those other green ones I just showed you on the previous slide. You see what an incredible difference that terrain makes, and how you go from a magnificent, kind of green area down just. This is just on the other side of Jerusalem. It's not far at all. How many of you have been down to the Dead Sea? Yeah? You know what I'm saying? This is like, wowza, huh? Really dry. And welcome to, welcome to the Dead Sea area. Okay. All right, now that's just something of the topography. Before I show you that, let me just show you one. Yeah, actually, we're going to look at Galilee next. But all right, so that's just a little bit of the geography, the physical layout of the land. Any comments or questions about that before I go on? Now, you can see, by the way, that when Jesus would walk, let's take a little bit of a look at the overarching map. But, Jesus lived up here in Galilee. And I'm sorry you can't see all those. I think I gave you a copy of this map in your notes, didn't I?
Yeah.
Okay, so look at your notes. But I'll use my little pointer to kind of point out where we are. Okay, yes, it's the Holy Land New Testament then map. You got that? Now, Jesus would begin up in Galilee. You see the word Galilee here up on this map, and you can see, look at your own map. Now look at this, and it says that when Jesus would go to almost every year, people who lived up there would go down to Jerusalem for Passover or for one of the big feast days. Now look at that. That is a 70-mile walk. All right. And they would make that once a year. That's 70 miles one way. All right. Now they probably took the better part of 2.5 to 3 days to make the walk. And again, there were two ways to go. You would sometimes go out here by the way, by the sea, and then you'd kind of come on up here into Jerusalem. You sort of come up this way into Jerusalem that way. And the good thing about that, it was fairly flat along in there, and they could come up the hills. Another way that people went, it was a much more dangerous way. You'd come down the Jordan River and through Jericho, and then you take a left and you come up into Jerusalem right there. A much more dangerous way. But depending on where you were, it might have been a little bit quicker. So you had to bring, obviously, a lot of water to get through that desert. And they would carry these big goat skins of water. And I'll show you a picture of those in one of our future sessions. But these were people who traveled a lot. They went up on foot. Now, Jesus went all over this region. I'm going to just tell you, man, he was a walker. He went all the way up here to Tyre and Sidon, way up in here, over here to, and again, if you looking at your own map, you can see these words better. But all the way over here to Caesarea Philippi, up near Mount Hermon. A beautiful waterfall there, by the way. And then he come all the way back down into this region. And then he go all the way down here into Jericho and up to Jerusalem and back again. And we know that he made that journey every year in his public ministry. And he probably made those journeys, you know, every year as a faithful Jew. Because they always went down, you know, faithful Jews, almost every year, unless they were very sick or old. They made the journey to Jerusalem every year. Think about walking 70 miles. People are like, wow, man, you ran a marathon. Whoa, man. That's only 26 miles? What is it? 26.3 miles. Well, you know, even if you double it, you're not. You know, you almost got to triple it to talk about the kind of journeys they just made. See what I'm saying? So please just take note. Now, let's talk a little bit about the political or the way they divided up the land in their own mind. You know, like we have states, you know, Virginia, Maryland, D.C., and so on. Well, they had similar layouts. So here, up here where Jesus lived, is an area called Galilee. Okay, this general area here. Now, just on the other side of the Jordan River was the Tetrarchy of Philip. But a more familiar region to Jesus would have been this area called the Decapolis, and that's just a word that just means 10 cities. Deca meaning 10, and polis meaning city. And it was a region of 10 cities, and we may look at a couple of those today, but this is what was called the Decapolis, all right? And then they would come down here to an area called Perea. Now down here in the south was Judea. Between Judea and Galilee, which were both Jewish regions, was Samaria. And Jews did not go through Samaria, except Jesus did. But Jews generally avoided Samaria. They go all the way around to avoid going through it. They just didn't like Samaritans. Hello. Welcome to the human family. Well, why did they not like Samaritans is the question. And the answer is ancient. Fundamentally, it's this. This area, the northern kingdom of Israel. Judea was down here in the south, where that's where Jerusalem is. This area in the north had become a separate nation. They kind of had a civil war situation where Israel in the north, the 10 tribes in the north, divided from the 2 tribes in the south, and they became enemies. And Assyria, from here over, this area over here was the Assyrians lived in it. They came and they invaded the northern kingdom in 721 B.C., and they destroyed that area. And they you ever hear the 10 lost tribes of Israel? Okay. Well, that's these guys up here. Now, that was 721 B.C. Now, a few of them, the ones who weren't killed in the war, were taken into slavery or exile out of the country. But a few remained here, and they did the most unthinkable thing for a Jew. They intermarried with Gentiles. And therefore, these Samaritans were a mix of Assyrians and Jews. But the Jews no longer regarded them as Jews, and they were worse than non-Jews. They had intermarried, and they were mongrels. So they had bad words for each other. The Samaritans didn't like the Jews either. They returned the favor. Yeah, kind of a Hatfield-McCoy thing. And you remember that story about Jesus went through Samaria, and he met the woman of Samaria, and she was hostile to him, and so on. All of that's. But what happened was, there was a special hatred they had for the Samaritans. It was ugly stuff. It was racism. It was all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Now, any other questions about these
general readings? Now, here in Jerusalem, Judea. Now, as you go further south, Idumea, that area down there is today, the Negev Desert. And here again is Gaza, the Gaza Strip, where there's all that trouble today. And then into Egypt, all right? This area down here is very deep desert, very desert. And there's the Dead Sea again, okay? Just so you get a general sense, though, Jesus spent most of his public ministry right up here. And then every now and again, he comes south into Jerusalem. But they didn't like him in Jerusalem. You want to know why? Well, most of the Jews who lived down here in Jerusalem thought of the people in Galilee as a bunch of backwoods clowns, as a bunch of hicks. And to make it worse, they had a funny accent in Galilee. They had a hick accent. You see how humble Jesus was? He grew up in a region where, these were up here were simple farmers, fishermen, they tended vines, they were shepherds, they were simple people. Down in Jerusalem, these were the great students of the law in the university town, and they were sophisticated, and they felt like they were kind of a cut above. And then again, you get these sort of folks up in Galilee, so when you hear Jesus, amen, amen, I say to you, you must eat the flesh of the Son of Man. That's not how they heard it in Jerusalem. Amen, amen, I say to you. see how humble Jesus was. So it was a kind of a hick accent. Remember that that's one of the reasons that Peter, they recognized Peter, the woman, and I know you, you're Galilean, I can tell by your accent. So it's funny how there were all these regional differences and stuff like that. Again, that happens in this country too, right? Especially back during Jim Crow and some of that stuff, it was even more severe. So all of these things would just be ways of saying that these are the different regions of the what we call today the Holy Land. Any comments or questions? Hmm? Yeah, Linda. No, the Red Sea is not the Dead Sea. The Red Sea is back over in, all the way over, it's further down off this map. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. But that's, so that would not be on this map. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
How far is Jerusalem away from the current conflict that's going on
now? Yeah. I don't have my, let me see if I can look at my scale here. You've got a scale on your map. Do the math. It's kind of like Ocean City is here. It's not right around the corner. Can someone do their math there? It's about, I'm just doing my math here with that little scale. What'd you say? Okay. So it's about 50 miles, yeah. So a little bit closer than Ocean City is to us. At least as the bird flies, but I think Ocean City is about 100 miles from us. But in other words, it's kind of like it's pretty far away in the sense that it's not right around the corner. It'd be like what's 50 miles from here? Fredericksburg, Virginia, right? About 50 miles. Up to the north, you'd probably get Westminster, Virginia. Maryland. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, I want to begin to move into. But I want to begin to focus on Galilee now, all right? That's the region up around that lake where Jesus lived. Now, you'll see here, this is just from space. That's just a picture of the Sea of Galilee, all right? And you can't really see much, on a picture like this, except that's what it looks like from space. But all these little towns that ring the Sea of Galilee, on this side especially, Capernaum would be right about here. That was Jesus' home base, and we're going to look at all these. And then Nazareth would be up in here, and Magdala, and all those little towns. So let's look at the map that makes sense. And you should have a copy of this on the back of your notes as well. Okay. I think you can pretty well read this map, though, from where you're seated. Now, again, notice there is a... some of these towns that sound familiar to you. Here's Cana. where he did his first miracle, water to wine. Here's Nazareth down here. And you notice it's not right on the Sea of Galilee. It's a little bit of a distance there. But it would be, it wouldn't be that long of a walk to get down to the Sea of Galilee, all right? Magdala, where Mary Magdalene came from, right there. Right? Gennesaret, you might remember some stories from there. But this was Jesus' main town, right here, Capernaum. Jesus, remember, was largely rejected at Nazareth. Remember that story? He preached in his own synagogue there, and they said, "Hey, man, you're talking pretty sophisticated for someone from Nazareth." And anyway, he could work very few miracles there because their faith, their lack of faith disturbed him. But at one point, he preached a sermon, and he got so angry with them that they were going to throw him off a cliff. And by the way, this is very mountainous in here. Nazareth is, think of San Francisco, and that's like Nazareth. Nazareth has streets like that, really steep, streets. And there are a lot of cliffs that he could be thrown off of, okay? In this region, by the way, people had a habit that's different from us. They would build their towns on the tops of mountains. Why? We build in the valleys, right? They built on the tops of mountains. Why?
Say it again? Yeah, so first of all, it's easier to defend the city. Remember, we're not used to that in this country, but getting attacked was pretty common in the ancient world. To quote my father, "Charlie, in the old days, things were tough all over. Life was brutal and short." there's a line in the Bible. In the spring, when kings go out on conquest, "Oh, it's spring, let's go make some war." it's incredible. War was just very common in attack. So you built your cities on tops of hills and you could defend them. But also, the other reason is that the valleys are the most fertile land. And we have an incredible expanse of land in America. But in places like this where the fertile land is limited, you build up on the tops of the mountains and you leave the fertile valleys to use your fear crops. Okay? But again, I want to just say, you remember down here, the widow of Nain? Remember, her only son had been died, and Jesus saw him being carried out in the funeral, and he raised him from the dead and gave him back to his mother. So that's Nain. You probably remember that. There's Nazareth. Sepphoris was a Greek-speaking town, and it wasn't a Jewish town, but Jesus probably got a lot of work there because it was being built. It was like a planned city. And Jesus and Joseph probably did a lot of work in Sepphoris because there's only about 250, 300 people living in Nazareth. But this was a big Greek-speaking town, a lot of need for builders, a lot of need for carpentry, stonemasons, and things like that. So I'll just bet you Jesus made the 7-mile trek frequently to Sepphoris when he was working with his father. And then up here in Cana, that's where the miracle. So you see that all of this area, this is where Jesus mainly worked. There's Bethsaida, Chorazin and all that. Remember how he cursed those towns? He said, "Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! If the miracles I've worked in you had been worked in Sodom and Gomorrah, they would have repented. And so on. And he said, "As for you, you will be brought down." And sure enough, these cities are in ruins today. They're being excavated as we speak, but they were destroyed. Capernaum is also in ruins. he was upset with Capernaum too. But this was his main, this is where Peter lived. And James and Andrew and John, all of them lived here. And they had a fishing business right here on the Sea of Galilee. And you'll see, we're gonna try to end tonight, depending on how far we get, but I'll show you Peter's house. And they've actually excavated Peter's house. And we know where Peter lived. And why do we know? I'll tell you all that in a minute. Okay, so there's our basic. This is the basic area where Jesus ministered, even though occasionally he went down to Jerusalem, and his final visit, of course, to die. Most of his miracles and most of the Gospels take place up in this area. Okay. So, oops, what did I just do? I certainly did. Here we go. All right. Okay. Now, this just shows you a little bit more, again, of the kind of complex topography. It doesn't really come up very well on the screen, but you can see once again, see these mountains here? That's where Nazareth and all that stuff, that little spine of mountains. Okay, all that area there. And then down here, but you see this deep rift? That's the Jordan River. But again, look at all these hills. Look at all that. See?
And that's the hill country of Galilee and just down here the hill country of Judea. Okay? Just so you get an idea how rugged and so on that area is. All right. Okay. So let's continue moving on a little bit. Let's look at some pictures of Galilee. We've already seen one picture of Galilee, but again, this again shows you, look at that, this side of the Sea of Galilee, and look across. Whoa! Those are the Golan Heights over there, and that's into the modern-day Syria, and part of it's in Jordan, too. But rough, just dry. But over here, beautiful, rich, green. Amen. Again, just another picture of Galilee. Okay. Yet another one here. This shows you again how mountainous certain areas of Galilee, and you know, these are the kind of little areas where Nazareth and towns like that would be tucked in, right in here. Okay.
What type of animals in their region?
Yeah. What types of animals? Well, the wild animals would be everything from gazelles and not leopards, but you know, really the smaller ones, those wild cats. But the main animals they domesticated were things like goats and sheep. They didn't really have a lot of horses. They would have some leopards and mountain lions and things like that. But generally, smaller animals.
Walking through that country, you had a chance of running into an attack of an animal, the lion.
Certainly. Yeah. And shepherds had to fight off a lot of wolves and gazelles. I mean, other animals of prey that would love to pick off the sheep.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so there were, you're not going to be the big wild animals like in Africa, but they're smaller, but. Yeah,
vicious.
Yeah, they're vicious already. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Napoleon complex.
They ran it back.
Yeah. So. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So, the names that they have now, are those the same names they had back then?
No, a lot of the names are different now. They haven't changed.
Do you know why?
Yes, there's a lot of reasons the names were changed. Remember, the Jewish people stopped living in this region after the war in 70 AD. And then different peoples began to live. First of all, the Greeks and the Romans sometimes changed the names of towns. Other names were changed by later folks, and then the Muslims, and they spoke Arabic and different. So a lot of these different towns have different names. And some of them still go by the same name, like Nazareth is still Nazareth. But some of these other names are not. For example, they don't really call it the Sea of Galilee, it's the Kinneret. They all refer to it as the Sea of Kinneret now, and so on. But, you know, it's. Okay. Now, what I want to start doing is let's ask another question that rather preoccupies us. We talk a lot about the land now. Let's begin to talk about the people. What did ancient Jews of Jesus' time look like? Now, you see, it's a speculative question. And by the way, it's a question that we ask a lot in modern times. You know, the Bible almost has very few descriptions of people physically. They might mention that a person is short, or they might mention, you know, some particular physical attribute. But generally, they were not at all interested in people's physical appearances. There's just very little ink in the Bible. We also have a problem because the Jewish people were forbidden from depicting human beings. There was actually laws because of the fear of idolatry. So they never had pictures of themselves. They never drew pictures or paintings of themselves. So there was an actual rules against that. So what you're looking at here is a picture of a Semitic, a Jewish, it's drawn by an Egyptian. So this would be, now this is actually before the time of Christ. This is probably the time when the Jewish people, the so-called Habiru, or the Hebrews, were slaves in Egypt. But this is how an Egyptian artist at the time depicted what a Semitic man or a Jewish man looked like. All right, so you can see that dark hair, medium complexion, heavy beard, and coarse hair. Okay? So, but again, it's stylistic, as the, you know, the hieroglyphs often did. But again, this would be the one, it's remarkable. The Jews never had pictures, drawings of themselves. They were forbidden from doing it. So that's why we have so little information. Why are we so fascinated how people look? Well, I mean, I don't know. We live in a visual time, don't we? I mean, everything is about pictures today, isn't it? Television, paintings, movies, you know, we're into pictures. How many of you take 300 pictures. Now we've got these digital cameras, right? You know, you go to a smaller 20-minute event and you take 45 pictures. Okay. So that's one glimpse we have. Here's a better glimpse. Now, they found a skull. They found a pretty well-preserved skull of a Jewish man from the time of Jesus. And you know how those forensic people can build, you know. And so what they did, the BBC sponsored it, but it was done by good, solid forensic people. Having found this skull of a man about Jesus' age, they used it and they reconstructed a face, just like they would do today in a crime scene. And nobody would do. So here's what a typically Jewish man would have looked like, they think, at the time of Jesus. So you can see kind of big boned. Now, we don't absolutely know the complexion or how dark or light the skin would have been, but the Jewish people were known to have a kind of an olive complexion, not dark as Africans, but certainly not as white as someone like me, okay? So it's somewhere in between. They tended to have coarse, rather curly, almost nappy hair, heavy beards, kind of, you know, big features. You get the idea? I think from what I've studied, most people, what few descriptions we have of the Semites of Jesus' time, would comport pretty well with what we know. They were noted to have thick hair. They were noted to kind of be big boned and hearty, strong people. Okay, so that's probably not a bad from what we do know today. Now again, we say, well, Father, why can't you just find a look at a Jewish person today and that's what they look like? Then no, because the Jews went up into Europe and they intermarried. They become very Europeanized, the Jews, you know, that we know today. So, again, the bottom line is that you have to kind of depend a little bit on speculation and a little bit on some of this forensic stuff. All right, now, how about a woman? Well, I don't really have, by the way, here's a more artistic representation of maybe somebody a little bit like Jesus, an artistic attempt at authenticity, again, based on some of what we've discovered today. You know, you can take it or leave it. But I think, again, medium-complected, coarse, you know, strong hair, heavy beard, sort of big facial features, you know. They didn't have small, slender noses and thin lips. They were hardy, thick people, okay? Now, as far as women, we have even less, because people were very discreet in describing women in the Jewish culture. But there is, what I'm about to show you is from a movie, but I think that it probably has some authenticity based on what we know. I think it's from a movie called The Nativity Story. But again, that would be Joseph and Mary from that movie. And again, who knows exactly. But somewhere between African and European, you find the Semites in a kind of a middle range in there. Okay? And here's just another picture of the same actress who played in that movie. And this picture we'll look at again later. You know, the idea that all Jewish women wore veils at the time of Jesus is probably not absolutely true. Some of them wore these more like bonnets, and others didn't wear veils at all. That varied from place to place, all right? The idea of all Jewish women at Jesus' time wearing veils is more of a Muslim. We're sort of reading back with our experience of modern-day Arabs and Muslims, okay? But they did often wear veils, but not always. But anyway, that type of garment and so on, we'll be looking at all the clothing later on. Okay. Now, I need to start wrapping up for tonight. I want to just quickly run through some real quick slides, and I'll go through them in more detail, because as I see the clock, it's 8:20. Now, we got started about 15 minutes late, so maybe what we'll do is we'll just do one more section on what was the village like. I'll go through it fairly rapidly, and I may kind of review some of this, what I'm about to do next week. But we've looked, remember, we started out in space, and we kind of looked at the geographic features of Jesus, where he lived. And then we kind of came a little further down, and we looked at some of the divisions. And then we focused more on Galilee. And then we said, well, what were the people like? And now I want to begin to come into a typical Galilean town where Jesus would have lived, all right? And we're going to look kind of at a typical one, and then we're going to look at a real one called Capernaum, all right? So let's begin. I hope this is not getting too hard for you to see. Well, the colors are a little washed out on this slide, but I wonder if you can see a few features if I point them out. Again, this is very stylistic, but you know, here's a lot of these towns were very tiny, by the way. They were very tiny, 200 to 300 towns. And there were probably as many as 200 villages and towns throughout Galilee, but they're all very tiny. Mm-hmm. Now, there's reasons for that. Any ideas why these towns would be so tiny and stay largely tiny? Any ideas why that would be?
What's that? Yeah, so in other words, you had to kind of live close to where you worked and all of that. And what did I tell you about Galilee? What kind of a region is Galilee? It's agricultural, right? So if you're living in too far from your land, you've got to walk, remember? So what you do is you have these little villages, and then they're surrounded by farmland where the people actually work. And they're actually, so most of the people are involved in agricultural things in this region. And so look at all this agricultural area. Here's some vineyards out here, and there's some, I don't know, you know, just, it's very stylistic, but there's probably some orchards in there where they've got figs or pomegranates, and you know, you've got these different, there's a shepherd over here. So you see, when you're living in an agricultural region, small towns make more sense. You live close together, and work within your fields are right nearby. Yes?
How many people
do
you say in a town like that?
200 to 300. Max. Now, there were villages that were bigger, and I'll distinguish those for you in a minute, but most of the areas of Galilee had what we would call just little villages like this, 200 to 300 people. Okay, now, in this picture, you see a little town, a little sort of path, not even a road. All right, up here on the hill is a synagogue. Every little town would have a synagogue, okay? You had to gather on the Sabbath, you know? And then this would be a typical house. We're going to look more closely at houses in a moment, all right? Or probably next week, actually. But these houses, I don't know if I just did kind of give you a quick preview. These houses were designed with open courtyards. There'd be an entrance from the street, and you'd usually go into an open courtyard area, which would then open onto several different rooms. And people did a lot of stuff up on their roof. See this person over here? They're up on the roof. People's second floor, because the weather's pretty, you know, you might have a little bit, a few months of rain, but it's not every day. And it's a pretty Mediterranean climate, cool in the evening, and people love to just kind of go up on the roof. A lot of times people would sleep up on their roofs. A lot of times people, you know, they would pray up there. This was a place to kind of get apart. So the roofs were very commonly used, all right? But you'd have down here at this level, like a kitchen area, maybe a dining room and a bedroom area. But there was always an open courtyard where they would do things like cooking, and they would do other types of things. So again, typical houses would have this courtyard and then several little rooms that would open into it, okay? Now, in every little town and village, near the beginning of the village, there'd be an area where hopefully, one of the areas, the reason you'd put a village would be maybe there's a spring or a well nearby, and or maybe sometimes a stream. But there had to be a water source for there to be a town. It just had to be. So you see that this is like the local area where people would come and get their water. This particular picture shows a woman here at a spring. They're lucky. Spring water was great. Well water, not so great. All right. And you see a couple women coming to get water. And then here's some market areas. It's hard to see some of this. I'm sorry. Anyway, you get the idea. There's a couple of market areas. Here's someone on a wagon bringing some goods from the market. Here in this little scene is not really a house, but but you see the same idea. There's an opening to the street that opens into a kind of a courtyard area. Here's the potter. There's a potter working in there, and over here off the thing is a blacksmith at work. All right. So that's just very stylistic painting that kind of gives you an idea of kind of a typical town. You have houses, you have a certain spring area, you have the area where they would buy and sell some things, and there'd be some areas where almost every village had a potter and a blacksmith. Why? Everybody needed pots and dishes. Why would they need a blacksmith? Oh, you got a lot of answers coming. I hear you. Okay, remember agricultural. What are you? You're going to need a good. You're going to need a lot of stuff to cut, like plows and things like that. And you need, you know, for the houses, you need hinges and doors. And so, almost every town had one blacksmith, even a small town. Okay. All right. Now, let me go on to another slide. This is just going to kind of give you a little more detail here. So, okay, I'm just focusing on that same picture. We're just kind of coming in a little closer. So, you see here again. There's the spring. where the women are getting water. By the way, almost always women got water. Sorry, ladies. You got to schlep the water. That's women's work. So, again, these were hardy women, all right? Don't give me these little will-o'-wisps. Thank you for Mary. Mary was a mama on the moon. She had some meat on her bones. All right, now, but again, there's the women gathering the spring. You got a shepherd out here nearby in the fields, all right? And here's again a market. It looks like they're selling here some utensils, and there's some different equipment. Here's a person, you know, with provisions. By the way, most larger families could afford to have a mule or something like that, and they'd have a wagon. And where do you think they kept their mules? Yeah, where do you keep your car? In your house. You don't think of it that way, but it is your house. You put your car inside your house. Are you crazy? Well, they would keep their animals in their house. It was usually a separate room off to the side, but that's where they kept them. All right. But again, it was good that sometimes several families would share an animal, because these are, you know, these were expensive, you know, to buy. So. You see here some people kind of sitting at the market. Maybe they're just taking a little time off. I don't know if you can see here, but they're doing laundry here. These are ladies doing some laundry. You know, when you don't have running water in every home, you know, you often have communal areas for things like bathing and also for washing. Now, when I say bathing, I don't mean complete nude bathing, all right? But I mean, you know, washing up and things like that. But you would have, I'll show you that most homes had an area for what they call a mikvah, where a person could get unclothed and bathe. These were not smelly people. They bathed often. All right. Okay, that's going on there. Here you see someone carrying something from the market. So again, typical, this is just one little area of the town. Another quick picture, another angle of the same town. Just coming in a little closer. That same house, and there's a synagogue. We've already looked at that. Again, I just want you to notice that they used their roofs. Their roofs were flat, with a little bit of angle to run the rain off. But they were strong, flat, sturdy roofs, and people were up there a lot, a lot. And you notice there was actually a law in the Deuteronomy that you have to have a rail on your housetop, otherwise people might fall and get hurt. Because people spend so much time up on their roofs that God actually put a law in the Bible that if you have a roof, you've got to have a rail on it. Otherwise, you are a sinner. So this is the synagogue of that same town. This is a close-up of the synagogue. And it's of course just cut away here, but it wouldn't be, you know, you get the idea, we're looking through the wall. But you know, these synagogues were ample. They would be, because this was the main meeting house. They would use it for prayer, but also maybe for other meetings. And they were typically all arranged the same way. You would have these benches on the side wall. Sometimes they'd be up on tiers, and I'll show you one in a minute. And other times, but you would have, you know, this is where the reading desk was. And by the way, the rabbi was always seated to teach. I know in our culture, we stand to teach. But in that culture, the teacher was always seated. Seated was a sign of wisdom. It was a sign of authority. Where's my chair? Okay. That's actually Father, your father, Father Drew would have to have the chair because he's got the authority over here. Now, typically in a synagogue service, the men would be seated on one side and the women on another. Okay? Also, they often had these upper tiers for overflow. Okay? Kind of like some of our churches today. All right. Any comment? Go ahead. Yes?
Women couldn't speak in the synagogues, could
they? No, they did not speak in the synagogues. That's correct. He said women, you know, knew that about women. Women did not speak in the synagogue. Yes. Oh, yes, yes. I should tell you a little bit about the building materials. Everything there was built with stone. Now, you would have to do some things with wood, like the wood trusses for the roofs and so on. But, you know, they used stone like we use wood because stone was in abundance. You know, if you were going to put up a temporary shed in this culture, you make it out of wood. In that culture, you make it out of stone. Because there's so much stone everywhere. So, but what they would do is, this may be a little misleading. Typically, they'd have stones. And then they would cover it with a kind of a stucco. And then they would paint the stucco, kind of bright colors, different colors, and so on. So typically you wouldn't see these exposed stones, but they would always coat them with a stucco-like material. Okay. And to have a pitched roof like that is pretty rare, but sometimes their synagogue would be the only roof, you know, with a pitched roof. And, and something like that, built more in a classical style. Because otherwise their buildings are very simple. And we're going to see how different that is from the Greek cities around them. Okay? I want to just quickly go through a couple more. I may reverse and look at these with you a little bit more next week again. But here's, this is the synagogue. It's a reconstruction of it, but they excavated it, the synagogue in Nazareth. This had been when they were unhappy with Jesus. Now you see the reality inside these things is they tended to be rather dark. Before modern building techniques, reinforced concrete and so on, it was hard to build big buildings with big windows because the wall was too weak. So you would always usually have to build these heavy, thick masonry walls with small little windows. So buildings tended to be dark inside. It just did. All right. But so here you see these three tiers where people could sit. And one here, one there, and one further up. So, and men on one side, women on the other, and so on. And there'd be a reading desk in the middle. And this is a reconstruction of the synagogue in Nazareth. And it's not the exact synagogue they've excavated, but they have discovered, this is a pretty archaeologically pretty accurate reconstruction of what the synagogue would have looked like in Jesus' time at Nazareth. Yeah, children would be in the synagogue, although they probably did the same thing we did. The littlest ones made a lot of noise. They probably had some area to keep them in. I would imagine. It's not mentioned much, but we have descriptions from the early Christian church of how the women were in the back with the loud children. They were asked to be in the back. In the crowd. Okay, here's just another village scene. Again, just real quickly, I got to go through it. But again, you have a gathering here. I don't know if you can see here, but here's a Roman official. Here are two Roman soldiers. Guess what they're doing? What do you think that line is all about? There's a Roman official. That's right, they're paying taxes. Look here on the rooftop of this house. See the little tent up there and all the people are gathered up there? Very common, even today in that part of the region of the Holy Land. People use their rooftops to kind of open the second floor. They go up for gatherings, and they sometimes pitch little shaded areas where they can sit under, and just kind of like a lot of us do with our back porches. It's an extra room that is outside, and people love their rooftops, and there's little steps down the side to get up there, and so on. They're breaking a rule. I don't see any rails. Sinner. Over here, you see another rooftop. See? Now, it was rare to have two-story buildings in most of these small villages. Most of them wouldn't have a lot of upper, the second floor on top. The second floor would just be the open floor. But some of them, and maybe this is getting to be more of a, not just a village, but a town, and they get a little bit bigger. Now, notice this here. We're going to look at this when we look at the agriculture. See that terrace thing on the land, that hill up there? That's very, very common in the Holy Land. They're wonderfully at terracing their land, so they would keep the erosion down. They could grow lots of crops up on these hills that way, and they were wonderful stonemasons. And they built these terraces, and they grew lots of crops up on these hills. Okay, let's see if there's anything else in the city. Here again, this is more of a well rather than a spring. So there's the ladies again. Ladies, get your jugs. And so on. Okay, we'll move on. I'll review some of these things with you next week again. This is just, again, more of a quick zeroing in on that same picture. But again, just notice the rooftop. Very common. All right. Again, just another quick look at another angle from that town. Here's a marketing area. I'm going to be blocking. I'm sorry. Okay. There's a marketing area here. They're doing a lot of that. So, okay. All right. Now, I'm almost done, I think, for tonight. This is just a market scene in a larger town. The larger town would be pretty good at selling a lot of extra wares and things. Now, the reason that I'm calling this a larger town is, in small little villages, families made their own clothing. You know, if you wanted to buy clothes, you had to go to a town. The fact that they're selling cloth and things like that, and by the way, to have colored cloth was very costly. Yeah. Dyed cloth was very expensive. So this would be probably a little bit more of an affluent town. And they're selling here olive oil here. This is olive oil that's being sold if you've got cloth. So that's probably a larger town that we're looking at there. All right, moving on. This would be an even larger town. It's large enough that it has a gate, a city gate. Only the largest towns of Israel, of Galilee, had gates. And again, they would have city, obviously they had walls around the town. as well. And that's, again, protection. Okay? And they would often have this thing you could lower in times of distress. And you could see the Roman telling that guy he's not a good guy. Hey, you Jew, stop that. You know, whatever. And it's just, you know, you can kind of see they had these very narrow little areas that the streets. Okay, I think we're just, I want to just show you by way of contrast. Oh, by the way, this would be what I'm looking behind. That would be an olive press you're looking at there. See the guy with the little circular thing over here? They're pressing olives, and then they're putting the olive oil in these amphoras, in these kind of jugs, and they're selling them here at the front. And that's just a typical... By the way, larger towns would have an olive press. Now, in small little villages, the women would just collect the olives, and they would press them and make the olive oil right in the home. But in villages, if you were in a larger town, you'd often have somebody to do that communally, and they would sell you the olive oil. Very important olive oil was. Okay? Okay, well, we don't have much time to look at Capernaum tonight, so let me just show you a real quick slide, and then we'll look at them in detail next week. That's what I was just showing you was just all kind of theoretical. That's a typical town. A real town, Capernaum. Now, I want you to see, this is what Capernaum looks like today. It's in ruins. And that looks like a mess. You say, what is that? That's a mess. But archaeologists know what they're looking at, okay? So here was a typical layout of Capernaum, and again, I'll look at this in detail with you more next week. But this area that they've excavated, I've been in that synagogue, some of you have been there with me. That's where Jesus gave the Bread of Life discourse. And then just up the street is Peter's house right here. And then this is the Sea of Galilee right down here. And Peter's boat, or Peter's house, was right on the water. That's pretty good for a fisherman, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. I'm just quickly going to go through these. This would be a kind of an artist's representation of what Capernaum would have looked like. All right? Fairly small, but not tiny. You know, maybe 400 or 500 people rather than 200 to 300. All right? And here's the synagogue. And here's Peter's house right here. Okay? And we'll look at that in detail next week. Okay? I'm going to just quickly go through these and we'll wrap it up. Now, this is just another artist's representation of Capernaum. Again, there's a synagogue and there's Peter's house. Peter's boat's right there. And that doesn't come out very well on the screen. Sorry. Okay, now, one other quick thing to say about the towns and villages of Jesus' time. Those were Galilean towns of Jewish people. The Romans and Greeks had a very different idea about towns. They built these grand cities in the Decapolis, and they built them in classical style. So let me show you. This is the ruins of a town called Gerizim. Remember the Gerizim demoniac? Jesus cast the demons out into the pigs and they went over the bluff. Gerizim is a city that's called today, it's in ruins, Jerash, but Gerizim is one of those great towns. This is some of the things that are left from Gerizim. Just so you see what these are epic cities, I mean, built in grand style. This is their gate to get into the town, all right? And then this is their main street, the Cardo, with these beautiful Roman columns that would line the streets. And then this is just one of their buildings. Okay, just one of their small little buildings. and then this is a kind of an artist representation of what the town looked like. See how different that is? And by the way, the Romans and the looked down at the Jewish people because of their, you know, their rough little towns. And the Jews thought this is very decadent living. All right. And then one final picture, and then we're done. We have here just a street scene from Gerizim. Look at the size of that. And just big, big Roman, Greco-Roman, classical style. All right? So we'll look at some of that in more detail next week. So that's about as far as we can get tonight. And I lost track of the time here a little bit. We got started a little late tonight, so that's why I went a little late with you. But right now, according to my watch, it's 8:41. I want to be finished with you usually no later than 8:30. So we're running over a little tonight, but I'm sorry. I want to respect your time. All right, so what we talked about tonight, remember we looked at the geography, kind of zoomed in, we looked at the overall Holy Land and how rugged the terrain is. We talked a little bit about the people and what they look like. And then we kind of began to zoom in on Galilee, and then into a typical Galilean town. And we ended up at Capernaum, and I'm going to start with Capernaum next week and tell you a little bit more about that. And we're going to look at people's typical home. We're going to go inside their home. And we're going to look around the house. And not just any house, we're going to look around Peter's house. And we'll answer questions like, where was their bathroom? What was their, you know, we'll look at things like that. Where did they sleep? All that kind of stuff. All right? So that's where we're headed next week. All right? Yeah, you got to